Now, as far as the Imams go, were they well received by the people in their time? They were all ill-treated. They were all ill-treated. So, goodness is what hurts people. Any man who is good for human beings, a true, honest leader, is most undesirable, persona non grata, for a society which has gone too far away from human values. So, number one, the phenomena should be understood in the context of what the Holy Quran tells us about this attitude of human beings. The Holy Quran declares in two places that people before you had made this erroneous concept that there would be no prophet after so and so. So in Surah Jin, for instance, Allah Ta'ala tells us that when a tribe which is called Jin, whatever the nature of those people may be, they came and accepted Islam at the hands of the Prophet Mustafa sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. While they were going back to their people, they were talking between themselves and talking of their stupidities, of their stupidity and that of their arrogance. One of the stupid things they mentioned there was that, look here, we thought Allah would not create another prophet. And here it is. So the concept of finality of prophethood, as understood by the opponents of Ahmadiyya, according to the Holy Quran, is not a new phenomenon. It is a very old phenomenon. Again, and the Holy Quran couldn't have mentioned it without any meaning or without any inherent message. The Holy Quran tells us that about Hazrat Yusuf, they had also created this wrong notion, stepfold. That first of all, when Yusuf came, they ill-treated him. After he died, they said, Allah would never create another prophet. And how many prophets came between Hazrat Yusuf and Nawal Sakhallah? So why this? This was a message to the Muslims. That we are warning you, people before you have misstepped and faltered in this path. And be warned, don't follow such old people. Some of them ultimately repented. They look at what we thought and what happened. So that is as far as the positive, clear declaration of the Holy Quran goes. Holy Quran tells us that this concept of not being any other prophet in time after somebody is an erroneous concept which has been held previously by other peoples as well, which was falsified by Allah. That is one thing. Secondly, Allah Ta'ala tells us in the Holy Quran that the very coming of a prophet is a phenomenon which is most loathsome to the people to whom a prophet is sent. It is just an excuse that we are opposing so and so because he has started the concept of a new prophethood and this and that. The previous prophets, all of them, did not have that blame in their account, because this phenomena was not repeated at the time of every prophet. This allegation was not raised against every prophet, that you have become a prophet after so and so, while you were not expecting anybody. Other excuses came to their head to oppose a prophet. But without fail, every prophet was hated, and so intensely hated, that except for the prophets, no other office bearer from Allah has ever been hated so strongly and intensely. So the most loathsome thing to the people is the concept of prophethood. And this is why it is not easy to claim to be a prophet. The hatred works in two ways. In the first place, the strong, very strong opposition tries its best to root out the claimant and all the paraphernalia around him. Now, unless he is rooted deeply in Allah's mercy and Allah's favor, this strong opposition is so strong and so powerful and overwhelming that it's impossible for an ordinary person to remain intact and to save him or his followers from that opposition. With the result that these people are destroyed. Either they are killed or their movement is destroyed and wiped out, and nothing is left of such movements. This is why Allah Ta'ala tells us in the Holy Quran, وَلَوْتَ قَبْلَ عَلَيْنَ بَعْدِ الْعَقَابِ. But that will come later on. I will come there later. Now the second part is that this opposition and strong hostility works in another way. If that prophet who claims to, that person who claims to be a prophet is not treated with such hostility and then he prospers, it would be very difficult for human beings to judge him to be a righteous man from Allah and a true claim. Because chances happen, he made a claim and by chance he became prosperous. People could think. But if you feed into the computer all the factors against him and almost no factor in his favor to win against the entire people, then if still he prospers, that is the sign of his truth. So the real solid truth of the prophet's claim lies mainly in this direction. If despite the very strong hostile opposition, he not only survives, he becomes prosperous at every opposition, that is a sign that there is some superhuman power behind him. So it serves as a true proof and it discourages false claimants as well. Because what happens to such prophets or claimants is a very strong discouragement to false claimants. So, once in Australia, 2 years ago, last year, when I spoke at the University of Edinburgh, the question and answer session was quite lengthened out, so much so that in fact we started trespassing on others' time and we were told to leave to vacate the hall ultimately. But some students became very interested. And one of them followed me up to the car. And the last thing he mentioned to me was that, look here, now I fully agree with you that whatever we have been told about the biblical concept of Jesus Christ is wrong. We have proved it according to the Bible. That he was never a God, he never claimed to be a God, there is no Trinity, all is accepted. I also accept that he was liberated from the cross and he is surviving. But if God has to create someone from among us to be the Messiah, as I understand your notion is, then why shouldn't I be that Messiah? Why shouldn't Allah pick me up as Messiah? I said, there is no reason why. But you know what will happen to you? I said, I have accepted one Messiah, Hazrat Nasim of the Rasulullah of Islam. And what happened to him was this, and what is happening to us even after 100 years from that time is this. He said, I am not going to become a Messiah. Even if I am not going to accept it. It's too horrible. So the claim in itself is a claim which cannot be falsely made by any man in his full sanity. Unless one of the two things happens. Number one, either he has the backing and support of a strong tribe and a political motivation is there which supports him all along, or such a person is mad. There is no threat possibility. Now you look back at the history of false claimants, in each case they will be distinct from the rest of the prophets in this much, that when they claim, a strong tribe was always behind them. A strong group of people was supporting them right from the start. While in the true prophethood phenomena, exactly the opposite happens. Previous to the claim, they are very popular. But the moment they make the claim, they are the most hated person suddenly and left entirely alone by the entire world. Overnight, they lose their entire popularity and remain alone. So instead of going back after this first treatment, they go forward and make more more claims which are still more loathsome to the people. For instance, when Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alaihi wasallam made the first claim, his claim apparently was addressed to the Meccans, particularly to his pilgrims, Amir Ashirat al-Aqadim. And then it seems to progress into wider circles. And ultimately, in the end, he addressed the whole mankind, it seems, chronologically. This is the order. And this is exactly what the Orientalists have objected against his claims. They say that his claims were the creation of humankind, because we see a progress, a development, and a sort of evolution in those claims, as if they were designed by human beings. First, he made a small claim. When ultimately it got digested, he took a step further and further and so on. Then when he reached Medina, then he claimed to be the prophet of the Jews as well and those of the Christians as well, that of the Christians as well. And then he said ultimately, okay, I am the prophet of the whole world. This is exactly the allegation made against Hazrat Akram sallallahu alaihi wasallam by the opponents of Islam. And this is also, interestingly, is exactly the allegation made by the non-enemy mullah against Hazrat Masih Maud. He said, what sort of prophet he is? First he says he is just a Mahmud, then he says he is also a Mahdi, then he becomes a Masih, and then he claims he is a prophet. He goes on and on adding things to him, whatever he is, we don't know. Then he becomes a Krishna. And then he says, I am Ibrahim and Yaqub and everything. You see, this is the human design, obviously. While the similarity between the master and the slave is so clear, that if one is designed, the other has to be designed. If the other is not designed, then the miss is discounted. But they miss the whole import of the situation. The fact is that this is the sign of truth, not the contrary. If you make a claim, and their claim is met with strong opposition, and you are punished for making that claim, then if you are a false man, you would rather retrieve your steps than go forward, and make a still more bitter claim. This is against human nature. If somebody is declaring that whoever did this, this is the price for that person, suddenly, a whole crop of people would raise their hand and say, we did it and we did it. But if somebody is declaring that some crime has been committed, and we are going to blacken such and such person's face whenever he is caught, and we are going to beat him hollow, and put him backwards on the back of a donkey, and make a procession out of him, would a false claimant appear and say, yes, I did it? It's impossible. Wherever there is punishment, a false claimant has nothing to do there. Wherever there is reward, false claimants come. So the very first claim of the true prophets deprived them of the whole popularity, and they left alone in the entire world. So to make a further claim is not against them, it is in favor of them. Despite having tasted the suffering at the hands of the opposition, they made a further claim to further antagonize them. And after they were treated in the same manner, they made a further claim. So that shows that they are not doing it falsely. Either they are mad, because, as I made it very clear, false claimants can either be mad or they must have some support. And this is exactly what is borne out by the history of the false claimants of true prophethood. Either they were bad people and nobody paid any attention to them, or they had some support. The rest, to whom these two things do not apply, they are true prophets. And it's so clear a distinction that any man who is not prejudiced can easily see that this is exactly the proof of the truth of the prophethood. Now, I will further explain this situation. When a prophet makes such claim and he is ill-treated at the hands of the people, and yet he goes on making further claim and does not mend his ways and claims, then people are left with only one choice. Because those who know that there is no support behind him, even the support he had, has been withdrawn from under his feet. They have only one choice left, to declare him a madman. Or if the society believes in sorcery, they would simply declare him to be a sorcerer. So these are the two reactions of the Arab society against Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And these are exactly the two reactions of the Muslim society and the non-Muslim society of India against Hazrat Masih Maud Isa Masih. He was declared to be a madman and also a sort of sorcerer who conjured up tricks and nothing more. So this is the reaction of the society against the prophethood, and the whole phenomena is based on the animosity of the people. So apparently, a very bad thing is resulting into some good things. The third benefit of this hostility, which is borne by the prophets and their followers, is this, that number one, like the master, no false claimant could have dared to face such opposition, just for nothing. So no false adherents can come to him when he has to pass through all this fire and has to suffer at the hands of the people around him just for believing in him. So a system of purification is set in motion. And that system of purification is the most important value in the eyes of Allah. If the believers and prophets were left alone, or if they were treated well at the hands of others, then more often than not, it would be the untrue people, the meaningless hooligans of the streets, who would rush to him first. Because wherever there is some benefit is to be gained, these people rush first, and the noble-minded and the gentle people are always left behind. This happens everywhere in human society, even in children, among children. If the teacher is to distribute sweetmeats, then those boys who are hooligan in nature, you know, are bullish, they will run forward and occupy the first place and come again and again and say, "We have, this is the first time we have come." And if they are to be punished, and some culprit is to declare that somebody has committed this mistake, come forward and have your beating. So these people will keep behind. No, it was that, you know, mesquite looking boy, that gentle looking boy, he did it, we didn't do it. So this phenomena works everywhere in human nature. More particularly so, when a claim to prophethood is made and some people begin to follow. So this works as a sieve, a system of purification and criteria for the good people only to come and get around the two claimants. So, gradually they pay. So the third or the fourth result of this phenomena is this, that if this progress goes on, and at every stage of hostility, instead of getting lessened in number and in strength and in influence, they become larger at every encounter. That is a further proof of their having the support of Allah. Because not only that they are not destroyed by this opposition, while they should have normally been destroyed, they gain, quite the contrary happens. They gain in strength in every direction from which they are attempted to be suppressed. So this is this phenomena, all these phenomena have been discussed in the Holy Quran in various places. Number one, the Holy Quran declares, "Law taqabbala alayna ba'dul ahadi, la akhadna minhu bil yameen, thumma la qatana minhu al-wateen, fama minkum min ahadin anhu hajizin." That whenever a claimant comes, claiming to be addressing the people, claiming to be addressing the Vedanta. People get annoyed about him. And Allah tells them that, look here, this is not your business to get annoyed. It is my business. This is the message of this person. He is saying something about us and attributing things to us. And you have no means to judge whether he is right or wrong. So instead of your getting annoyed, it is we who should get annoyed and we who should destroy him. And this is exactly what we do. So Allah tells them that look at the case of Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alaihi wasallam. You say, taqawwala alayna ba'du laqabi. He has attributed to us one or two sayings wrongly and mystifiably. Why would you say that? Ba'du laqabi means one or two sayings. Taqawwala is bab al-tafawul, which means from all. When you are making a thing up which is not true, then you call it taqabbul. Like the kalluf. When you are doing something artificially. So this is exactly the meaning of taqabbul. Law taqabbala alayna ba'd al-qabi, if he had attributed things to us erroneously, wrongly. La akhazna minhu bil yamin. We should have caught him by the right hand. By the right hand is applicable both to the one who is caught and the one who is catching. This is the beauty of the Arabic language. Rahalna Bindu Bil Yameen, that we could have caught him with our right hand, with full force that means. And we would have deprived him from all sources of support. Right hand means, in his case, that if we had caught him by the right hand, he couldn't have defended himself in anything. فَأَخَذْنَا مِنْهُ ثُمَّ لَقَطَعْنَا مِنْهُ الْوَجْهَ. When we would have cut his jugular vein and the life artery. Vadim is in fact the life artery. And فَمَا مِنْكُمْ مِنْ أَحْدٍ عَنْ مَعْزِمِينَ. Not only this, then even all of you, instead of opposing him, then would have tried to save him from our wrath, you would fail positively, you would not be able to defend him. So the phenomena is turned exactly the opposite way. The message here is that you are opposing him because he has made a claim about us. And you think that you are more sensitive about this falsehood than we are to whom claims are attributed. You are not in a position to judge while we are in a position to judge. So we, as if we are not acting, we are not sensitive to this, and you are sensitive while you have no reason to be sensitive about it, you don't know anything. But if that were what you say, then it is not your animosity that would have destroyed it. It would have been our wrath which would have destroyed. Even if you had become friendly towards him and supported him with all your might, you would have failed totally. This is the phenomenon. In another verse, the Holy Quran tells us about a person from the people of Pharaoh who had accepted Moses' faith, Moses' claim, secretly, for example. Now, he did not belong to a very high order of those who believe because he was hiding his faith. That was the maximum standard he had. Yet he said something addressing his people which appeared so beautiful to Allah that he kept it in store for to be revealed to Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alaihi wasallam at the time of the revelation of Allah. This is the beauty of what he said. He said to his people when they were planning to murder Moses and his followers and put them to all sorts of atrocities. At that time he appeared and he addressed his people. And this is what Allah tells us to say. He said, وَإِنْ يَكُ كَاذِبًا فَعَلَيْهِ كِذْبُهُ وَإِنْ يَكُ صَادِقًا يُصِيبُكُمْ بَعْضُ الَّذِي يَعِدُكُمْ. That, O my people, in vain, without any rhyme or reason, you are trying to oppose him. You are opposing him, considering him to be a liar, that is all. But if he is lying, you will not suffer for his lies. What have you to do with him? Leave him alone. If somebody lies, he suffers. Not those to whom he is lying. You just have nothing to do, no talk with him, that's all. That should be your reaction. So how can you suffer for his lies? But I tell you one thing. Iye ko sadhana. If he is right, yusitkum badun nadiya, then positively, definitely, that which he is threatening you with, that will court it. So in vain you are doing something which is not your concern, but you are opening up the possibility of danger for you. If he is right, then you must be punished by him. Keep him. That is the correct attitude towards the Prophet. So the hostility of course is there. Allah does not approve of that hostility, even against false claimants. So these mullahs who say, because Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salam, according to them, is a false claimant, so we have every right to uproot Ahmadiyyat and everyone who follows him. That claim is totally falsified by the world. If it was good at the time of Moses, it is still good. If it was not good at the time of Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Allah would not have preserved that saying and related it to Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam without it meaning, because it did not apply to him. It did apply to him, to Ummat Muslim. If anybody is making a claim and somebody thinks he is a false claimant, according to the verse of the Holy Quran, they have no concern with them, with such a claimant. All they are to do reasonably and within their rights is that they should have no trouble with such a person. Really. But they must not oppose him, because the moment they oppose, they run the risk of being destroyed by Allah if he happens to be right. And that is a big if. Because whenever Allah speaks to some servant of his, he does not call any other human being as witness. It's only between him and Allah, that's all. So nobody, in fact, has any possibility of being a witness. If I tell you something in private and send you to for this session, for instance, with a message, and you say that I have been told, and you tell them that I was alone with Allah, with such and such person, and he has sent this message. No. Do they have a right to start beating you and telling you you are a liar, you are a false person, we can't accept you? Of course, if they are human beings, they won't behave like this. If the values of humanity remain intact, all they can say is that we don't believe you, we don't think you would accept. And unless we go and verify this from him, we are not going to act upon it. That is a normal, justifiable behavior. This is exactly what the Holy Quran is telling us. So in another place, the Holy Quran tells us that if a claim is made and you are opposing it, you won't stop opposing it, then for you there is another way of looking at this, and there is a very strong evidence which will prove to you that such a claimant was right and was from God. And that principle is mentioned in the verse following, rather than we will recite. أَوَلَا يَرَوْنَا أَنَّا نَعْتِ الْأَرْضَ نَنْقُصُهَا مِنْ أَطْرَافِهَا أَفَهُمُ الْغَالِبُونَ. Why don't we observe this phenomena? That after every encounter, after every attempt to suppress the apparently weak, the result is that your own land is being lessened from the corners, from all the borders. And you are appearing weaker and weaker after every encounter, and those who are weak, they are becoming stronger in comparison. This is exactly the thing. So those who lose ground after every encounter, how can they become victorious in the end? So it's not a normal phenomenon that the stronger must become powerful and victorious. Exactly the opposite is happening to these people who have followed the claimant. That after every encounter, you are losing ground and they are gaining ground. Prophet Guru are not true. They are frustrated, they are destroyed, they are a game of centralization is played about them. And they think they have gained something, and ultimately, when after the battle, they keep the count, then they make the count, then they know that it was only the loss of the suffering. So this is exactly what has happened to the movements of hostility against Amazon. Look at the record in two eras. One prior to the movement, read their claims in their newspaper. And then after every movement, read their analysis of their failures. One after the other, they come out with another excuse that we failed because of this, we failed because of that. This happened and that happened. And ultimately, they say that they have emerged stronger than ever before. This is the verdict, invariably, of the most hostile enemy of Amazon, after every encounter. Go back to the pre-encounter state and they say, now it has the time come when we are going to uproot Amazon as if it never existed. The claims are so tall and so hostile and threatening that if you remember very well, during the Arab movement, the first Arab movement of Qadian,
34, 35.
During that period, Maulana Atawla Shah Bukhari declared it in Qadian that you will see in a matter of days, Ahmadiyyat will be uprooted from every place, even from Qadian, to the extent that after a while, when people would come to Qadian and ask what Ahmadiyyat was, people would say, no, we don't know, never heard of it. And we will demolish the entire buildings of Qadian and raise them to the ground. And he was a good speaker of a sort, mob exciter. And he said, Qadian ki se ek bajate. Look at those things. And look at the analysis later on about the Arab movement, how it failed, how the movement came to a most disastrous end. And how the very supporters of Arab started in the writing poems of invectives against them. Look at Maulana Zafar Khan's poem about these very Arabs. Where he says, Islam ke Arab, Islam na. Punjab ke Ahrar, Islam ke Baddar. It's a beautiful point. He himself was an Ahrari before that. So this happened that time, this happened in 53, pre-53 era and post-53 era. This happened in 74, look at the pre-74 era and post-74 era. And this is going to happen this time, that I assure you. Inshallah. With a bigger bang, inshallah, the whole world would hear the resounding of Ahmadiyya victory, inshallah. And I can see the very signs appearing. You see, inshallah, this is going to happen. This is a history which is unchanging. Right from the time of Adam, it is consistent. Not a single instance can be quoted where this history can be changed. For the last 100 years we are observing this, how can we lose faith? Because at our back, we have the full history of religion and all the pious people all the world among mankind. Now look at this, their excuses. They are so interesting to read after they fail. First they say that now we have come to the arena and now we will see how Ahmadis are saved from our hands or our hostile attempts on. So, in the end, when they analyze the situation, they come up with very interesting excuses. During the Arab movement, the first claim was that nobody can save them from our hand. And afterwards, they said, okay, it was the British who saved them from our hand. Obviously, they were planted by the British, so they saw to it that no harm comes their way. So we tried to help Allah as best as we could, but poor Allah, you know, that was in essence their excuse. This was their analysis, but the true analysis when you look back at their student list, that in the Holy Quran Allah said that when I wanted to destroy anybody, nobody could save him from my wrath. Even if you gathered all your might between me and him, still I would reach him, and nobody would be able to save him from my wrath and destruction going to overtake him. Yet the Ihrar said, this verse of the Holy Quran is to be maintained. What happened was, Allah was sleeping and kept sleeping. The claimant came and went his way, and no harm came his way. When the community started to spread, then we realized that something has happened to our Allah. He is not waking up to the situation, he is not taking law into his own hands, so why shouldn't we take the law into our hands? So we took, we tried to help Allah. But poor Allah, he could not make it. They were the British might between us and him, or that is from between Allah's side and his side. So everybody clapped and said, this is the most beautiful excuse, we understand why you failed. So after the partition, the British went their way. It became a tale of the past, a story. And the Muslim state came to be. And it was the first Muslim League government which, in alliance with the Ihrars and other hostile elements and Maududis and things, tried to trample Ahmadiyyat out. And they said, they declared, and if you read the pre-53 era reports, you'll be surprised how sure, how positive they are. They said, they say it in so many words, that previously they were the British people who saved them. Now we'll see who stands between us and Ahmadis. And they are positive to be destroyed and completely wiped out. After 53, what happened? You look at the analysis made by Maulana Maududi and some other Maududis and Ihraris and so many people. The nutshell of that analysis is this, that in fact what happened was that we understood and the Western bloc understood the dangers of Ahmadiyyat and we wanted to really wipe them out. But unfortunately, the Bengalis did not understand it. And because they held the democratic majority, and the Prime Minister was Hajjan Akhuddin, when he was also a Bengali, he stood in the ways of our wrath and empathy, or the wrath of Allah and empathy. So Bengal saved him. This was a natural analysis. What happened? Allah said, all right, we'll take Bengal away, like we took British away previously. So you are not left with any excuse. This is exactly the excuse put forward by them in many minds, many. And the second part of it was that also another factor which played its role in this was that it was a provincial movement of Punjab making. And it was not a movement by the central government. So, why it could not be the movement of central government? Because of Bengal and some other factors. So in fact, two parts were to that analysis. One, there being a provincial movement, and second, there being Bengalis in the way of Ahmadiyya's destruction. So Allah will help. So they launched a movement in 1974. Bengal was no longer there. The central government was that of Bhutto. And he claimed in the most resounding tones that the Sehra, the credit of Ahmadiyya's destruction should go to me. I have solved the issue which nobody else can solve.
Nabi Salman,
90 years old problem that he solved. And while he was hanging, just before hanging, he was still saying that I am the solver of the 90 year old problem. And everybody clapped for a while. That's a great thing that we do. But afterwards, when they had time to dig their bones and see things in the daylight, they realized that they had gained nothing from that. what happened was, number one, Bhutto, along with that party, which was responsible mainly for this solution of the problem, were completely destroyed by others. While they remained powerful, so powerful after this, that if a true election was to be held after martial law, still Bhutto's party would win. Still, it is the ghost of Bhutto which is threatening there and his supporters in the regime. This is why they don't go to the elections. They are afraid of Bhutto. Still, after he has been there. But Bhutto alive and his entire force and the entire support of the world could not save him from the law. If he was right, if it was the enemy of God whom he had ultimately succeeded in, if not destroying, in deeply wounding, then what sort of reaction should Allah show to him? What a strange God he is now. That first of all, he does not react to such situations which are in fact against him. He does not react against such movements which are in fact against the very essence of religion, if the way of law, I mean. And he becomes completely paralyzed. But when people begin to help him and then sort of achieve some success, then suddenly the whole paralysis disappears and he wakes up to destroy those people who helped him. Strange God. Not one which is witnessed in the history of religion at all. And the nutshell was, I mean the sum total was, that the same would now within the 10 years of their so-called success, starting saying, they took their enemies and emerged much stronger than before. What have we gained? They are spreading faster, they are gaining more in influence, in number, in wealth, in everything. So what is the net result of that exercise of 74? So some more hurdles should be put in their place. And the first hurdle which they had put in 74, it was a hurdle of course, which was put in the Anthony's progress, was mainly this, that they said that if we declare them non-Muslims officially, only then their preaching would be frustrated and stopped, and they will cease to spread among them. The claim of the Mullah was, previous to 74, that whatever arguments we give against Ahmadis, our arguments will not reach the common man. And the common man also is incapable of understanding those arguments. Ahmadis go to them and deceive them and say things which the commoner doesn't understand, so poor man in simplicity accepts Ahmadis. So to stop this deception, it is necessary that categorically they are declared non-Muslim. No Muslim in his sanity would jump that high and cross over the wall of Islam and land into the non-Islamic land. That is the sort of concept which they had created, and they in fact succeeded in implementing it. And Allah permitted them to do it so that another idol is broken. Like previously, Allah had been breaking every idol they created. They said, all right, if this is the idol, you think this is going to work against them, go ahead and do it. They did it. And now their analysis is that Ahmadiyyat is spreading much faster than before 74. And this is true. General Chishti, when he was in power, he was asked once in Azad Kashmir about the measures they were taking against them. So his answer, which is published in Pakistani papers, was this, that we took every measure to stop Ahmadis from spreading through preaching. But most unfortunately, according to the government reports, since 1974, they have gained 10% more adherents through preaching, which never happened in the pre-74 era.
So their so-called success was in fact a stone laid for their own destruction. And this is why they have reacted so strongly against us, and they said now, unless they are deprived of all human rights, they are not going to, we cannot stop them from spreading. The result is that we are spreading even faster. And in certain places in Karachi, in Pakistan, reports are coming that previously the rate of conversion was, for instance, 30 per month. And after this, this ordinance, that rate has risen to twice as much. I mean, I'm just quoting a figure. And people who are taking interest in Ahmadiyya after this ordinance are coming from all walks of life, even some people who were never approached by Ahmadiyya. They themselves come to Ahmadiyya and tell them that preaching is stopped, is a crime for you, made a crime for you, but not for us. So we are free. We come to you and so tell us about Ahmadiyya and we take the responsibility. And the Ahmadis take the risk, they say, all right, even if we are punished, and if this is a crime, it's all right. So I get reports, daily reports, of strange pro-Ahmadiyya inclinations and tendencies among every class of people. In civil, in military, among the illiterate, in villages, even people come and accept Ahmadiyya without any Ahmadiyya and Ahmadiyya having ever spoken. For instance, some people have accepted Ahmadiyya just because Allah had shown them in dream that Ahmadiyya is true. And just like that, they were left with no choice, they came and accepted Ahmadiyya. So as far as Ahmadiyya goes, every measure they take against us, that is going to be frustrated, and every idol they make in their imagination, that idol is going to help them. That idol will be broken by Allah. And this is the phenomenon. Hostility is permitted to flourish as it pleases. Yet it is frustrated entirely in every direction. Defeat is their lot. And victory is the Lord of the people. So now you understand that the animosity against the prophets is in fact a blessing in disguise. Otherwise, they are the most loved people by Allah. Why should Allah put them in such a hazardous situation? To show their love and nearness, to show Allah's love and nearness,